Okay. Let's see. There we go. Look at that. I can mess one up. What I love about doing these podcasts is you just hit unrecord and start over again. So anyway, Fish and Frank in the chair here. We got Captain Ron Jones with us. We are going to be talking about fishing. I'm glad it's fishing. I don't know what else I would talk about. So anyway, I guess let's get right into the fishing and see what Captain Ron Jones has to say. Good morning, sir.
How you doing, Frank?
All right. For some reason, I'm not getting you here. What's up with that?
I don't know. Is that any better?
Yeah, that's good. There okay. We go. Okay. Sorry about that. I just, I'm new to the equipment here. I've only been doing it a few years. So, so anyway, how's the fishing been out there?
Fishing has been good. Catching a lot of fish. A lot of snook. A few redfish. Still doing good on the mackerel, bluefish, a couple of cobia.
Talk to me about the mackerel and the bluefish. Not hearing a lot about them, and I know there's a bunch around, but I haven't heard much. What's going on?
The bite's been up and down. I've been catching, if I get the weather pretty, our weather's been so screwy this whole spring, but if I get a pretty day, the mackerel and bluefish been biting very well.
Now, you're using the same type of things on both?
I use extra long shank hooks with a 60-pound. I bumped my leader up, 60-pound leader, and just hooking a shiner to them, and they're eating them up.
Freeline, bobbers?
Freeline.
Freeline.
Yeah, yep.
Now, how are you going about finding the schools? What do you look for?
I'm actually not finding schools. I'm just kind of working areas that generally produce for me. Some of the places off Boquilla and some of the wrecks, artificial reefs, that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. So are you finding more inside or outside?
I haven't been outside at all. Everything I've found is inside the bay.
Yeah, it's been a little rough out there.
A little bit would be putting it mildly.
Yeah. I mean, because I'm used to it, my flats boat being able to just swing into the Gulf and hit some stuff and come back in. And boy, that'd be real dangerous right about now.
Yeah, this whole spring has been terrible. It's been blowing 20 miles an hour, and it doesn't matter which direction. One day's north, one day's west, the next day's east, but it's 20 miles an hour.
Yeah, I mean, it's blowing a bit out there today.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they were calling for 15 to 25, and I just came across the bridge, and it looked slick calm today, but...
It's rough. I want to say it's rough.
Well, the only
there.
Thing I'll tell you about a weatherman, my dad always said, is if you're a fisherman, he said he'll either starve you or drown you, one or the other.
Yeah. No. I get that entirely, because in here, my whole life revolves around the weather. And I've been almost afraid to look, because this store runs on sunshine. When it's warm and sunny and everything's nice, we're packed to the gills. When it's a little cloudy and rainy, not so much.
Yeah, I've been fishing through most of it, but it has been a bear. I've been taking a beating. Yesterday was horrible. It blew all day, a lot of rain. We had a great day, caught a lot of fish. We probably caught, probably caught 70, 80 snook and probably a dozen redfish.
Not a bad day.
No, it was a good day.
You know, so one thing you got to love about Charlotte Harbor is there's places to hide. The only one I have a hard time hiding from is the south wind.
Yeah, south wind is a bear. And I don't like a south wind or a north wind. I can deal with an east or a west, but a south or a north, generally that tide gets killed on that north.
Well, usually because I'm up here, I can hide on the north wind because I can go along, the edge from the Myakka River up here and along the Peace River. But you're fishing a lot south. And south, that north wind, by the time it gets all the way down to the bottom of that harbor, that's some big waves down there.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's tough getting from Burnt Store over to Pine Island.
Yeah.
You know, that's a booger to get out.
It's been tough all spring, I'll say that. It's probably the windiest, toughest spring I've fished.
All right, well, let's start off in the morning. You're going to do a charter. Are you finding mornings, afternoons? Which is better?
It all depends about the tide. I mean, if you get a good tide in the middle of the day, that's when your bite is.
Now, does it matter incoming or outgoing?
I don't care as long as that tide's running.
As long as it's moving.
Yeah, as long as it's moving. When that tide goes slack, and same thing with those mackerel and bluefish. I've got some places that I'm producing every day, but you can go out there when that tide's slack and you won't catch a dang thing. Catfish.
Now, So you haven't seen a big difference between morning and evening. Now, what's your game plan when you leave the dock? Now, are you going to go out and look for some schooling fish like the mackerel, bluefish first, or are you going to try and head to hit the bushes? Or
that all depends on tide as well. If that tide is up and coming or up now, and falling, I'll go to the bushes and do snook and that kind of stuff.
But so when the tide comes high, now you're going to go back and hit the mangroves,
yes,
and stuff.
Yeah.
So on those higher tides, you're looking to get back on the flats.
Yes.
And are you finding the fish way under the trees or more out by the drip edge?
I haven't been finding much under the trees. Most everything I've been finding has been on the outside bars, kind of away from the tree line. A little bit on the trees, but not much. Most everything's been offshore, and I don't know why. It's kind of a different year. Everything is.
Oh, yeah. This year's crazy. So you're looking out by the sandbars where the flats, yes, meet the harbor more.
Yes, correct.
And you're finding more of your fish out there.
Yep.
Now, is that still true in the afternoon?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I get it might be the cloud cover, because I know the water's warm. I've heard reports of anywhere from 85 and 90 degrees in some spots.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of mid to upper 80s for sure. And I haven't seen a 90 yet, but I don't look at it all that much. But the water clarity in the last 2 weeks with all this rain has gone from crystal clear to red, dark.
Well, I just did a show earlier, and I looked at when you go to fishandfranks.com, you click the weather button at the bottom of the page, I have a Peace River flow chart. And experience tells me that when it's the water level in Arcadia is 2 feet or less, we really don't have any water coming down the river.
Mm-hmm.
It's at 11 and a half feet. Now it's down to just under 11. It was a flood stage there is 11, and it was hitting just a little over flood stage. Now it's down to a little less than 11 foot, 10 and three quarters or something like that. So that's a 9 foot plus wall of water coming at us.
Oh, yeah.
That's
a
lot of fresh water.
Yeah, you're seeing it. Like I say, I was hoping we'd get a little bit of rain, but we got way more than a little bit, and it has totally changed everything around. That water, a couple of weeks ago when it was real clear, the bite was tough. You could see the fish, but you couldn't get them to bite. And now that water's so dark, you can't see the fish.
But if you can find them, they're not hard
if
to
you,
get to hit.
Yeah, if you can find them, now they're biting.
So your game plan changed from going out looking for fish now to just going to likely spots, is that?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So it's almost the time and experience on the water, being out there and knowing that, well, they should be here. You find in the freshwater moving them to places where they probably wouldn't normally be?
We've been catching a lot of snook, and the snook are starting to make their migration. I've seen some big schools of them show up, and now they have totally disappeared. And they are headed out to the beaches and that kind of stuff. I mean, I saw some schools, monster schools, of fish show up a couple of weeks ago,
right,
and they're gone now. So the only thing I can figure is they've made their migration and they're headed out to the beach to spawn.
Now, normally I would say by now they're probably heading up into the harbor rather than going out to spawn. But with El Nino this year, there's no telling what's going to go on.
Oh, yeah, that's,
and I mean,
that's
some could still be going out there. I usually figure June's about the last of the big spawn. But, you know, everything's been so crazy. The one thing I know is you're on the water every day. I've been stuck on land. I've been seasick standing in the store. So getting out of boat has not been even
an option.
Yeah, no, not even close. I'm going to the Silverstein Institute up there, and they're supposed to get me fixed. But anyway, I find more about that next week. So you think you're seeing some schools moving out towards the beach?
Yeah, I am, because they a couple of places there I started fishing these bunches of fish, and I saw them going further and further south, kind of down the harbor. And I don't know, that's what leads me to think that they're going that way. They're not coming up the bay, because they were stretching out further and further that way.
Well, one thing I know is I know better than argue with you. You and your family have been on the water here since Christ was a corporal, you know. And I still tell stories about me fishing and your dad fishing across the bar from me. I'm catching the little snook and he's catching the big ones, and I wouldn't go over there because that's where he fished, so I always stayed out of there. And unless there was nobody around, I wasn't on a charter, then I'd go play for myself, but I always stayed out of your dad's spots. But yeah, he used to make me nuts.
Well, that's good and bad, I can tell you. I fished with him on some charters, And some days I kick his ass, and some days he kicks mine. But it's more the opposite way. He usually kicks mine.
Yeah, he has a special affinity for those big fish.
He does. He's been on the water his whole life, and he's done everything. Any way you can make a living off the water, he's done it. Yeah. And he's got a feel for things, and he puts some things together that, and when he tells me about it, I'm like, I wouldn't even have thought of that.
Yeah, no. There's a whole different level of, you know, you're getting into that now where, you know, it's surprising how many years it takes to try and develop that.
Yeah, there are so many little tricks to it, I can't even tell you. I mean, just little things that you do, and it makes such a big difference.
And the hard part about it is, it's not even something you know to talk about, because it's stuff that you do and stuff you learn, and it's not like secret knowledge, but it's just kind of time and experience.
That's exactly right.
And being around people.
Yeah, you know what's funny? That I have people on the boat, and I tell everybody, you can learn something from some guy that just started fishing a year or two ago. And I have people that try to tell me about charter fishing stepping on my boat. And I'm like, yeah, you know, sometimes they have a point, but generally it's best to listen to me.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I've never got is you're paying somebody a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then you're telling them what to do.
Yeah. I still have that not all the time, but I have that on a regular basis. I had a guy saying, hey, man, do you think we go? I have a place over here around Bull Bay. You want to go try that? And I'm like, no, I'm taking you to places where I know the fish are, where I know we can produce. And it was one of those days, it was a slack tide on a four tide day, and it was weak. And we were around fish, and you could see them. They just weren't feeding. And we did catch fish. It wasn't a terrible day, but they thought they knew better than I did. I'm like, sure, if that's what you want to do, we'll go try it. And we went over to his place. We didn't catch a fish.
Well, you know, it's like the doctor said to me the other day. He says, you know, well, we can do this. What do you want to do? I said, I want to listen to you. I said, if I was that smart, why would I need you? You know, I'm here because you're the one that's supposed to fix me. So you tell me what to do, and that's what I'm gonna do. I'm paying you money so that you can advise me. And you know, it's kind of like, I don't understand why people don't do that with charter boat captains.
They don't. I tell people all the time. I had some guys on the boat the other day, a couple of days ago, and I said, I had them 2 days in a row, and we caught a bunch of mackerel and bluefish the first day. And it was about quitting time, and they're like, you think we can go try those bluefish and mackerel? And I said, they won't bite. The tide's not right. And I said, we fished them when the tide was right. And I said, we can go over there, but I don't think they'll feed. And we sat there for about an hour and a half, and we caught one fish.
Yeah.
And I said, and they said, well, you told us it wouldn't bite. I said, that's just been my experience. I've been here. I said, you come back on the right tide, and they'll feed. But when that tide's not right, don't even bother.
Yeah. No, I remember a guy came in, and I had taken him on the charter of his life. He had the best day fishing he's ever had, and since the many years since I quit chartering, he's been a lot, but I was very lucky. But it was exactly that. And when I came by the first time, there was a boat sitting there, a bad place. I knew they weren't ever going to catch anything, but they wouldn't leave. And we drove around for 4.5 hours trying to find any fish, and finally I came back, tide was right, nobody around the spot. We went in there and just waylaid some of the nicest fish you could ever imagine. But being there at the right time and knowing where to put the boat is a huge thing.
Oh, yeah.
That, to me, people wonder why I can tell them any place I go fishing, because the problem is, even if they go to the spot, and a lot of people don't even bother, they want to go where they normally go, but one of the things that they do is they don't take time to learn the spot.
Yeah.
And learning each one of these spots, where you put your boat, where you cast, what you have to do to make that spot good, because that's 80% of the battle right there. Yeah. And then you got 10% luck and 10% other factors.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I almost think luck plays a big part in it. But now, what we said was, you started out, if the water's high, you're going to go and try and work the flats and stuff. Now, as that water drops, is that when you're going to go out to the more open water stuff?
Yeah, when that tide gets low, I don't do anything on the flats. I kind of go find something out in deep water, do some snapper, grouper, mackerel, something like that, cobia, but I leave the flats. When that tide is low, and it's not always a case, but the majority of the time when the tide is low, I can't get those fish to feed much for me. They're spooky, and places that they congregate, that they come to, they flatten out and they scatter. So it's hard for me. I just don't have much luck when that tide's real low. Now, there are some places when that tide's real low and falling that I can hammer the fish, but it's a...
I mean, in the wintertime, I like the low tides.
Oh, yeah.
Because it congregates the fish.
In the wintertime, it's a different deal. This time of year is not the same.
And that's one of the things about time and experience, as we've been saying, because in the wintertime, I like to find the lowest tides possible because that's the only place they can be.
They have to be there.
That's exactly right.
Right.
So if you can get the boat back to them, if you can get in there, if you can get anchored up off the side of it, and you're fishing in a barrel, because there's nowhere else for them to go.
Yeah.
But at this time of year, as that tide drops, it never really gets to those low marks.
Yeah, well, you got the fish, that time of the year, most of your fish leave the flats, and they're actually hanging kind of to those deeper edges and that kind of stuff. But this time of year, when they get up on these flats, and that's where they're supposed to be, when that tide gets low, it never, like you're saying, it doesn't get low, and they just scatter. They go from...
Because we keep 6-8 more inches of water now than what we do at the other times of the year.
Yeah.
And 6 or 8 inches doesn't sound like much, but when you're considering that average depth there is 2 foot, so that's 25% of the total.
Yeah.
And it's literally twice as high, because in some of those spots you've got 1 foot of water in the winter, 8 inches on low tide, but now you've got 16 inches on low tide.
Yeah, and the water temperature as well. When that water temperature is cold, those fish have a totally different reaction.
All right. Water temp brings up a good point. Now, what are you finding right now for bait? Are you using cut bait, shrimp, live bait?
Buddy, I'm not using shrimp, but I'm using a little bit of everything. I'm using cut bait. If I can, sometimes I'm catching some ladyfish. I'm using cut pinfish. I'm using
bigger chunks, smaller chunks.
I kind of change it up constantly. Sometimes small stuff, sometimes big stuff. I'm using a few thread fins. I'm breaking those up. I'm using live thread fins. I'm using pinfish.
Now, at this time of year, because the water's so hot, you're talking mid-80s and stuff. That's very low oxygen. Hot water doesn't hold the oxygen that colder water does.
Right.
So the fish are slower. I think they want something easier to eat. And people get surprised by how much during the summertime we throw that's actual dead bait. We cut the bait in half, tear the bait up in pieces using chunks of bait. I think it's because of the smell. The water's dark because of all the extra rainwater runoff and that extra smell in the water from the decaying meat.
I agree 100%. That smell makes a big difference, especially if you're fishing a place where you've got some tide movement. If you throw that out and those fish cross it down tide, that smell would bring them in.
So, are you finding, let's say when you're going out, you've been working the outside of the bars, are you dicing any of the bait up for chum or?
Yeah, I'm doing a little bit of everything. You got to stay versatile. I'm trying a little bit of everything. Some live bait, some of that cut up bait. I mean, whatever you can do. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, you kind of got to go get a feel for it. And, you know, as you see the bite starting to change, you can change over to one style or the other.
How about artificials? You doing anything with that right now?
A little bit. I've been throwing a few topwater things when I get the bite going good. Some of the guys like that, and I've been doing a little bit of that. And
What's the topwater that you like to use?
Man, I guess old school. I like the Zara Spooks.
Oh, that's good. I'm a big fan of the Zara Spooks.
Yeah.
Now we're going to be getting any day a new lure from Rapala.
Uh-huh.
I will give you a couple.
Okay.
Do you use any MR17s? The mirror lure stuff, the twitch baits.
You know that I used to use them, but my lure experience is very limited because I've gotten so used to using the live bait or cut bait. Most of the people.
Well, when you're on a charter, it's a whole different thing than when I'm fishing myself.
Right. I don't have a lot of people that are good enough with a rod and reel to use a lure.
And the problem is, it's not only that, but when you're doing a charter, if you got 2, 3, 4 people on the boat, you cannot go down a shoreline working a lure. You can't have everybody throwing lures, and because it's too dangerous.
Yeah.
These are sharp hooks. They're pointy.
Yeah.
They got barbs on them. It's tough. Now, when I go fishing myself, and this is something that they're coming out with a lure that those of us at Fish and Franks have helped them design, and it's a single hook front, single hook back. Mm-hmm. Single hook lures. So that's one of the reasons you're going to want to try it. Yeah, all single absolutely. Hook stuff.
Well, a lot of times, even with the spooks, when I get on those redfish schools or even the snook, when they're biting good, mm-hmm. I take the barbs and I'll cut them off and make them single hook. They're trebles, but I will take and cut down two sides of it.
What you might want to try is we have a VMC replacement hook. It replaces the trebles with a single.
Mm-hmm.
And flatten the barb on the front treble, because you need the front treble for steerage, for
right,
weight.
Right.
It's
yeah,
designed for that. But I take the barbs off of the front hook, flatten them down with a pair of pliers. Then I put the single hook on the back, and what an amazing difference. And that single hook is where you'll catch 80% of the fish. And the ones that do get a little bit of that front hook in them, it just comes
right out
because you don't have the barbs on them. I do it for two reasons. One, for my fingers, and two, for the fish, you know.
Yeah.
Mostly for my fingers.
Mostly for my fingers, I agree.
They eat blue crabs, stingrays.
Yeah.
Their mouth and everything on like a redfish and a snook and all that literally is made to have something poke through it, pull back, and heal very quickly. So the barb really isn't doing a lot of problems for the fish, unlike when it gets into our skin.
Right.
That's why I don't ever use barbs on sharks. Their mouths are too much like ours. But I think you'll be interested. I'll show you how to... I'll rig one up with you one time.
Okay.
And,
that sounds good.
But, yeah, Rapala's come out with a whole new lineup of all single-hook lures, and it's going to be very cool. We're going to be one of the first stores to have them. They're actually giving them to us before they debut at ICAST.
They've promised
that we would have them in the store, up on the walls, and they're not marketing them. They're not saying anything. They're going to debut at ICAST, then everybody's going to hear about it. You're hearing it on Radio Fishing before the rest of the world's going to hear it.
Well, that's
but
pretty cool.
We've helped design them, so... we're getting a little advanced stuff so that when they come out, they're already be in stock here. But like you say, lures are tough when you're on a charter. Every once in a while, you get those one or two guys that you're going to take out and push pole around the flats, and they're just going to have a ball throwing the lures. But most charters aren't that way, and that's why I think most of when I was doing charters, it was mostly bait.
Yeah,
because I didn't want all them jigs and spoons and lures and all
slinging
trouble
around
hooks.
Your head and then people are throwing over the other lines, and you know, not everybody's a good enough rodsman to make that work.
If they were by themselves, but most people don't want to go on a charter by themselves.
Yeah.
You know, even a moderate fisherman can do good with, you know, throwing lures if there's nobody around.
Right.
But
right.
I've had to. Lures in the back of my head and shoulders and arms and thighs.
Knock on wood, I haven't had that yet.
Oh, yeah. And he was sitting there. He did a back cast. And he caught me on his back cast right as he was going forward.
Drove it home.
Right up at the back of my head. I had both sets of trebles in the back of my skull. And the nice part about it is, you know, there's not a lot of meat there. So just flatten it and push it down. It pop right out. But, you know, all the blood coming down with the sweat, it was quite impressive. I looked really tough, you know. It wasn't anything, but I looked like I was a real He-Man because of all the, you know, stuff, and I was still fishing. But, they're jerking on it, like, why won't this come loose?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, God.
You're like, wait a minute. That happens to be in the back of my head. So it's always fun, and it's a good time. But if you're going to... tell somebody, let's say somebody wants to take some kids out, a good area to take them out into just to look around, and would you use bobbers or would you use freeline or sinkers?
Gosh, Frank, right now the kid bite for me, and I've had a bunch of them. Actually, last Monday and Tuesday I had kids, and it's been, I would say, kind of get to the deeper water. That's kind of where I've been working my trips and some of that stuff. And that 6-8 foot of water, some deep grass somewhere, and there's been a little bit of bite of everything. Still catching some ladyfish, jackfish, a few mackerel, bluefish, a few trout, but it's been a busy bite. For kids, you got to keep them entertained.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go up on the flats and the snook aren't biting, or it's a slow bite. Grown-ups will take that, but kids won't. Before long, they're putting their rods down or slinging them, or they're playing in the bait well. So you have to do something to change that up. But all the last few times that I've had kids on the boat, it's been in that deep water that I've gotten it done.
So you're going out looking for 6-8 feet of water, which is usually about 50 feet, 60 feet off the sandbars usually.
Yeah.
And trying to find, how would you look for bottom feature? Any tips of what they could look for?
Man, I just kind of look for some something a little bit unusual. Look for some bait, some thread fins, or some kind of grassy area. Something that's just a
little
bit different.
We're not going to be able to see the grass right now. 2 weeks ago, you could have saw it.
Yeah. You can still see it a little bit, but not much. And I would imagine that's going to get less and less as the next few days come in.
Yeah, with 11 feet of water in Arcadia, that's a lot of...
It's going to come on down. Yeah. But yeah, try to find some thread fins, some kind of bait. If you see some bait movement or any of that stuff, now, there's some things I've seen, some glass minnows starting to show up. So
that's always my indicator, because the glass minnows are health of the harbor. If we get a lot of glass minnows, things are healthy. If they're not, then we got problems. Now, are you seeing any clear water on the incoming tides coming in from Boca, or is it just staying kind of brown?
Well, I haven't been down around Boca Grande since we've had this rain. Most of my charters I've been working from Mat Lache around Turtle Bay, Bull's Bay.
But I mean, in Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, are you seeing any cleaner water on the incoming?
Sir, it's all been that. It's starting to get darker and darker everywhere I go.
Just getting darker and darker.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just wondering how the tides were affecting, because a week ago the incoming tides were still bringing in
some
clearer water.
Yeah, it's totally changed. You can get out there around the Cape, Cape Ace Point, and you can see even when that tide's still ebbing in, it's flowing out, and that's river flow.
And it's funny, because right now the surface is continuously going out, but it's the water underneath trying to build up.
Yeah.
And the tide's trying to come in, but there's so much water on the rivers. And if you're up around 41 and you've got an incoming tide, and you got your anchor out, your boat's kind of going, wherever it is, and then that tide turns, you better hope that you ain't by any pilings, because boat's going to swing around.
Yeah, it's going to
be
taunt.
Yeah, because I bet you right now, at the beginning of the outgoing tide, within the first half hour, it's hitting 6 miles an hour up there for
you. Oh, I would bet it. Yeah, absolutely. That tide, well, I came over the Lettuce Lake Bridge the other day, and you can see that water running like a river, and it should have been around slack tide, and it's running just like it's supposed to. I mean, it's flowing out of there.
Yeah, and I talk about this a lot this time of year. Without these big freshwater flushes, the harbor wouldn't be as healthy. You know, people always talk about, Shaw Harbor, you got this and that and next thing, but we also have a big cleaning mechanism, and it's these floodwaters coming down the Peace River, the Myakka River, even the Caloosahatchee, helps freshen the whole harbor up. Freshwater kills saltwater bacteria, and then once the rains stop and everything turns to salt, if it dries out good, and then the saltwater kills the freshwater bacteria.
Yeah.
It's what helps keep our harbor alive.
Frank, I think I agree, and I think that used to be, and I think it still is, a big deal, but I think that there's something else going on with this bay. It's the be honest with you, it's the fewest amount of mullet, the fewest amount of redfish, the fewest amount of trout, fewest amount of sandbrim that I've ever seen in my life.
I will tell you, as far as the redfish goes, I think 2 years ago we had that bad red tide, and it hit in the fall.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of big redfish died, a lot of the breeders that usually come here to spawn, and I think it killed a lot of the babies. And we're now 2 years later is when we would be trying to catch fish, and I think that has a lot to do with the redfish. Now the sandbrim and the mullet, that worries me.
Yeah, it's
especially the sandbrim.
You know what, Frank, in my opinion, they don't need to take any fish while they're spawning. The sandbrim should be cut off, the mullet should be cut off, the redfish while they're spawning should be cut. I don't understand why the state of Florida doesn't see that. It makes no sense. While those fish are spawning, let them go. The rest of the year, if you want to catch them, that's fine.
The mullet, if they don't get them in the spawn, they got no money in them. So
there's more mullet fishermen around right now than I've ever seen. I don't know where they're not making any money. But even at that you can't keep producing these mullet while they're spawning. Between the red tide and taking them while they're spawning, I'm telling you, there's the fewest amount of mullet I've ever seen, and that's the bottom of our food chain right here.
I'm on your side with it.
Yeah. And it's scary.
Here's a weird opposite thought. Purse seine boats. Now, when you have the little mullet boats hitting them, and they take a lot of mullet, breaking up the schools, the mullet go out to spawn out in deep water in smaller bunches, it's not worth running a purse seine boat after them. And when we have the big mullet runs and we get a lot of fish running where the guys miss them inside,
right,
and they get out, then they hear about these big schools out there, they hit them with the purse seiners, and that's 100% mortality. Right now, we're probably dealing with 60-80% mortality, where with the purse seiners is 100%. This is the conundrum that you have with the commercial fishing industry. When you have all the little boats hitting them, they're breaking them up, they're taking a bunch of them, but then when you have none of the little boats hitting them, then the big industry boats come, and then everything's gone because nothing escapes.
Yeah, they have to do something for it. I don't know what the answer is, Frank, but something needs to be done. I used to commercial fish. I mean, so did my dad.
So did I.
And there are no mullet here from what there was 10 years ago, 15. There's nothing.
Oh, I get it. I mean, you ride around to get finger mullet, and in the spring, early summer, there was finger mullet everywhere.
Yeah, you ride around on those flats, and usually, especially now coming on down to the fall, and when that tide turns out, mullet go to jumping everywhere. All the oyster bars are awash and jumping mullet when that tide turns out.
Yep.
You go down there now, and there's a little pod here and a little pod there, and there might be 50 fish, 100 fish, but that's it. Used to be there was a wash of mullet all the way down those bars. When that tide would turn out, or all the islands would be a wash of mullet. And you go down there now, they're not there.
Well, one of the things is we are one of the largest estuaries there is.
Right.
I mean, it's a huge estuary. Now, they're not allowed to do all this stuff in Tampa. Why are everybody still allowed to do everything here?
I don't know. I don't know why. Just what I said, all of that stuff, if you closed it down while they're spawning and give those fish a chance to come back.
But why are we commercial fishing in the harbor?
We shouldn't be. There should be no shrimping in the harbor. There should be no commercial fishing in the harbor, period. If you want to do it, that's fine. Outside the beach, have at it.
You know, it's just one of those little conundrums. Why is Florida's largest natural estuary not a restricted area?
Yeah. Well, blue crabs. I tell you what, there's the fewest amount of blue crabs I've ever seen. Used to be you'd catch one in your cast net in the morning, or two or three in the morning when you're catching bait. You don't see any blue crabs. And all these guys, my uncle is a crabber, my dad's a crabber, I was a crabber. I mean, we used to all do that. And used to be a man that had 70 traps, had a lot of traps. Now, these guys are running 1,000, 1,200 traps, but they run them on a four-day layover. So those traps are catching for 4 days before they get to them. And anywhere a blue crab shows up, if you go to that area, it will have a trap every 100 yards.
Oh, easy.
Yeah.
I'd say that's a very low estimate.
Yeah, it's a total mismanagement by the state. But the state of Florida, when I was a kid, I grew up with my dad going to Organized Fishermen of Florida off.
Right.
And going to the meetings. And the state of Florida has never done anything but put a Band-Aid on it. And I'm so disappointed, because this is a whole resource that we're going to lose out, that my son will lose out on.
Well, hopefully not. Now, I've been offered a position here recently that I accepted. So we'll see what happens when Fish and Frank shows up. They don't
Good
like
luck.
Me at the state. I mean, we've got... I actually have quite a few state people listening to the show, and most of them are really cool, but most of them are not particularly happy when I show up. I happen to be a little opinionated. Wow! The worst part about it is I'm right. If I'm, I don't shoot my mouth off unless I'm sure I'm right. So that, I think, bothers them as much as anything. So yeah. Anyway, but back into the fishing here, and here's the two questions. We're having last year during the winter, we did not have a lot of trout, and in the spring we showed up with a bunch of trout. Now the same thing happened this year. We're seeing a lot more trout here this year.
No, not for me, Frank.
Oh,
it's
this spring has been crazy with trout.
Not for me. The places that I usually produce trout this spring, I mean, the last 4 or 5 years in a row, I have some places in March and April that just show up with a huge trout.
And this year, it was May and June. This May and June has been the 2 months now where we're seeing the trout.
It's the fewest amount of trout that I've seen. I'm telling you, I can't produce now in early in May and in April. I had some places I could take you to catch a limit of trout, but right now it's very sporadic. I catch one here and a couple over there and two or three over here, but that's it. Nothing that I can say, hey, we'll go catch a mess of trout.
Right.
I'm not seeing them. I'm not seeing the big trout. I haven't seen them all year.
These are the differences, because I think the one thing is they're not where they're supposed to be. They're not showing up when they're supposed to show up, and they're not where they're supposed to be. But I've been hearing some amazing stories on the trout. Have you been doing any of the triple tail?
I've been catching a few triple tail. Kind of been screwy, but not anything I planned on, just been catching them.
And this has to be the best year we've ever had on triple tail, by all reports that I've gotten. I've never seen a year where there's been so many triple tail in the harbor. We had a pretty good year last year, but this year tops it by double.
Yeah.
And a lot of big triple tail.
I haven't been targeting triple tail, but I have caught some just incidentals, and it's kind of different than usual.
I caught one at the Port Charlotte Beach under the docks in that bay by Port Charlotte Beach. Caught some under the docks there. That's the weirdest thing ever.
Yeah, I was out fishing a little reef out there, and we caught one the other day last week that was huge. I mean, a big one, looked like a stop sign.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get it. Now, going along with that, a great year in triple tail. One of the, are you seeing anything for cobia around?
3 weeks ago, we were catching where I could take you to say we'd go catch cobia. And now I'm still catching a few, but it's not anything I can bank on. I go around here and there, and the last one I caught was last Friday. And we caught a big one. He was probably 36 inches to the fork.
Nice fish.
Yeah, nice fish. Nice. Yeah.
So for you, it's becoming more sporadic.
Absolutely.
It's not okay, I can go target.
Yeah, it's just kind of one of those things that's an incidental if it happens to run across one here or there.
Now, are you doing any playtime with the sharks?
Yeah, I have been. I've had some people that wanted to do the shark thing, and we haven't. We caught a good many of them a couple of weeks ago. Now, the last, I did a trip there, I think, last Thursday. And they wanted to catch some sharks, and that's kind of not always the case, but we end up going out there, and I think we had 3 runs, and I think we caught, the biggest one was about 5 foot spinner shark.
Yeah, nice. They're a lot of fun, because very active.
They smoke that line and jump and spin.
I mean, anybody who's ever, thought bonefish were fun, have never hooked up on a spinning rod a 3 or 4 foot shark.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, as I tell everybody, I growing up here, everybody looks down at the sharks like, I'm not going shark fishing, that's kind of a goofy thing. But I've been out there in the last couple of years, I've had a lot of people that wanted to do it, and I don't give a darn, it's exciting. When you hook that joker up on one of those big spinning outfits and he starts screaming that line for 300 yards, that's exciting.
That is, and it's amazing. And several of the sharks literally will come out of the water and do backflips for you.
Yeah.
And very underrated as light game fish.
Yeah.
I mean, with light tackle, these things are just spectacular, in my opinion. Now, one of the things, speaking of going into spectacular and jumps and all that, I guess next thing, have you been doing much for tarpon trips?
I've been doing a few tarpon trips. I haven't been wide open at it. My tarpon fishing has been off and on. I've been doing a lot of flat trips, been mostly keeping me busy. But the tarpon I have been fishing. The last tarpon trip I had was last week, maybe Monday or Tuesday, and we got on the tarpon up here in the harbor, and we did not land one. We jumped 3.
So it's a nice trip.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. We had tarpon all around us, but for the first 4 hours, nobody hooked up there, and then all of a sudden they went to feeding for about 30 minutes, and then that was it.
Don't you love it when that happens? You're sitting out there, and you're in this big pot of fish, and they're everywhere. They're rolling and boiling, and they won't do anything, and then somebody turns a switch.
Yeah, that's it.
And they eat anything you throw is going to get hit, and you've got that amount of time to get as many hookups as possible. and then it shuts off again.
That's it. That's just exactly the way it happened, too. We sat there for 4.5 hours and didn't get a bite, and then when it cranked up, we had all three of them within 30 minutes, and then it shut down again. We fooled around there for about another hour, and there were other boats around us, and everybody was hooking up right at the same time, and then it all shut down. Nobody hooked anything else.
You have to wonder, what does somebody yell, okay, now, all right, that's it, you're done, no more.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's the way it is, too.
It's just crazy. So, anything, right now you're talking to people in Canada and New York and Pennsylvania and Minneapolis, and even Tallahassee listens to us. They always want to know what I'm saying bad about them. Potential people coming down. What would they expect out of a trip this time of year? Because we're at the end of May and we're looking at July.
Yeah, this is a transition period. When all this rain hits in, everything's changing. And it's going to change pretty quickly here and over the next couple of weeks, in my opinion. It always does. But right now we're catching a lot of snook still. A few redfish. If I get my tide right, I'm catching a few if it's a good tide. On a weak tide, I can't produce a redfish. But catching a few trout, still some mackerel, bluefish.
So what they really want to do is go on somewhere where they can get, my tide reports only go for 2 days, but go on somewhere where they can find a good tide and try and plan their trips around a lot of water movement. So
yeah, all of my clients, look, if you're looking to come down and you're going to book a charter, call up and ask your guide, say, give them a window and say, what's the best tide in this time period? And let them put you on the open day that they have for the best tide. It ups your ante on trying to catch good
fish.
And
by best tide, you mean the most variant in height.
Yes, strongest tide, incoming and outgoing, strongest tide.
What you're looking for is somewhere where, like, we have a 0.6 going to a 1.8, or a 1.8 going down to a 0.5 or something like that, where you've got several hours of a lot of water movement.
That's it. Exactly it. I mean, when you get around tides, just what I was saying before, if I can take you to places, and I have pulled up on these places where I'm catching these mackerel, and you'll sit there for an hour or so when that tide's slack, and all of a sudden that tide will start rolling and you catch one, and then all of a sudden you got two, and then you got three on at one time, and then it's wide open. And all that is tidal movement. You want to try to book your tides or book your charter on the best tide day.
Okay.
And the other thing I was going to tell you, we were talking about tarpon. I tell all these people that I have, that I've been taking, and that this time of year everybody thinks this is our only time for tarpon. If you want to try to produce a tarpon, I'd say come in September, October. I've had some phenomenal days, and nobody thinks about us having tarpon there.
And there's almost nobody here.
And there's nobody here. That's exactly it.
And so if you want that trip of a lifetime on tarpon where it's just you and the fish and very few of any other boats in the area, September is the great month for fishing.
September and October are both phenomenal. Well, October, when you get late in October, as soon as you hit a cold front, the tarpon are gone. Well, but in September, generally, that has been wide open. Last year, it was crazy. I mean, we went up in the bay, and as far as you could see out there was exploding tarpon striking on those baits. It was the neatest thing. I mean, just awesome.
I wish you guys could see it. I'm sitting here looking at him, and Ron is pretty quiet. He is true Southern boy at right country at right down the definition. He's a pretty quiet fellow, but he's sitting here, he's got a grin, he starts talking about September tarpon, he's grinning from ear to ear. I wish you guys could see it. Tell me your phone number.
941-628-0105.
Okay, 941-628-0105. I put that right there. If you want to call Ron and book a trip, give him a call and tell him when you're going to be coming down. He can get back to you with the best tides and explain what fish you're interested in catching.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I have a lot of people that come down and book me from out of state, and they'll come down and I'm kind of used to doing my certain thing that everybody wants snook and redfish and kind of targets that. But I had some guys on the boat and we were out there doing that and we were catching, they were happy with it, and they were from Minnesota, I believe. And I just happened to be talking about sharks, and they said, "You think we can catch a shark?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, I've been catching a bunch of them." Well, I'm like, "If you guys would have told me," I said, "I could have had this, you know, all lined up." Well, now we got to go, and I've got to go catch bait, which I usually keep some bait in my freezer right at the house if I know I'm shark fishing. So now we got to change gears and go catch bait for an hour, and then go try to shark fish. So kind of tell your guide what you're looking for on your day.
Well, not your guide, you.
Yeah,
call Ron and say,
tell me what you're looking for.
Tell, yeah.
And I might say that's not doable. I might say we'll keep that in the back of our mind.
That's the one thing that people don't get, is when you call the captain and say, "Listen, I'd really," because we get guys that come down in November and they want to go shark fishing. We're like, "But it's too late or too early."
Yeah,
you know, you've got to be more realistic than that. Just because we have some sharks here, you know, you're going to spend a lot of money, and chance of you having any success are not good.
Yeah.
I mean, this is Charlotte Harbor is the place for the dream trips, to catch what you want to catch. But you've got to talk to the captain and say, "Listen, guy, you know, this is really what I'd like to do. When's the best time to do this?
Yeah.
I really want to do this. Can it be done, and when's the best time?"
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And if you tell them what you want to do, most of the guides will say, "Hey, that's not going to happen this time of year." I always tell everyone, shoot straight with them. Say, "This is not going to happen right now. Or it might happen. This might be. We can go spend some time on it, but don't get your hopes up. This is a long shot for this time of year."
And it's a really good thing, and it's great advice for people who are out there, because, let's face it, it's a lot of money to come to Florida. It's a lot of money to get the charters. It's, you know, and to do that, you want your best shot.
Yeah.
And if you've got a fish in the back of your head, this is what you really want to discuss with, and when you call Ron, discuss it with him and say, "You know, what's my best shot?" Because I love fishing triple tail. It's a passion of mine. I like the hunting, fishing mixture aspect of it.
Well, that's kind of like the Kobe in the springtime. We had them for about 3 weeks there. You just kind of get on the boat and get on a slow plane, and then you see them, and it's throw it, as long as you can put that bait in front of them. Not always, but most of the time, they'd eat it.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, anything else we should go over? I know you're busy, and you got to get back into the world.
I think that's about it, Frank. I'm getting ready to head out of here and do some Father's Day business.
Oh, when is Father's Day?
Tomorrow.
Oh, that means I got to find a store or something. I don't know what the heck I'm going to do. You know, well, luckily my dad likes to fish, and I do own a fishing store. So, yeah, I might be able to come up with something.
That's kind of sorry, Frank. You need to go find something else.
Yeah, I know. But I don't know. I'll figure something out. But anyway, this is Fishing Frank in the chair. I got Captain Ron Jones in the chair across from me. And I really appreciate you doing radio fishing. Anytime you're in the area, stop by. We're looking to get radio fishing back up. My health's getting better, and I do find out Tuesday what they're going to do to me. So, one way or another, we should all be good. Say goodbye, Ron.
Thank you, Frank. Enjoyed it.
All right. We'll get up with you guys on the next radio fishing. And thanks so much for listening.